I know I've never been like balling out of control or anything, because in my adult life, I've never lived somewhere that didn't have a mouse for a period of time, right? And a mouse will humble you, because a mouse, you'll be thinking you got it all together. You got it all figured out, everything. You know, you'll even be looking at your bank account and be like, wow, I'm killing it. I'm doing very well. And then in the distance past the laptop, you'll see a mouse scurry in the corner. You'll be like, I could do better. That's fair, right? But this is what bothers me, is that anytime you have a pest in the home, people act like it must be you. Like it has to be your fault, exactly. Expressly your fault, right? But it's like, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. I'm picking up after myself. I'm grabbing the clothes off the floor. I'm not leaving any food out. I'm vacuuming. I'm sweeping. There should not be a mouse in my... I'm not trying to have like a Disney Pixar experience, right? Like it's just, this happened, you know? And then, like, let's say, goodness forbid, but let's say you actually had a mouse problem, and then you went to work, and you told them, like, ah, yeah, I got a mouse in my apartment trying to get it taken care of. Your coworker would be like, oh. Oh, you sure you should be here? Like, yeah, you know I mean, like, you inviting them over or something. It's very frustrating, you know? Because, like, goodness forbid, once again, but let's say a different pest came in your home. Let's say a burglar broke in, right? And the next day you go to work and you tell someone, it's like, my home was burglarized last night. They would be like, oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry. That's horrible. That's such a terrible thing. You must have been terrified. Are you okay? Is everything all right? They would show compassion. They'd have empathy. They wouldn't be like, ugh. I guess that's just how you were raised, huh? Like, do you see the difference? Very, very frustrating. Because, like, I'll give you an example. When I lived in Chicago, right, I had a mouse in my apartment. I had lived there 2 years, no mouse. And I finally had a mouse in my apartment. Now, I lived in an apartment complex that was near some other ones. And a bit south of our apartment complex was a building that had been condemned for humans, but it was a mouse mansion, right? Like it was, that's where they were. That was the spot, right? And everybody knew it. And eventually the city tore down the building and they took down this ratatouille tenement. And obviously the mice were like, where should we go? Probably next door, right? And so for the first time ever, right? I had a mouse in my apartment, but the way that I found out was horrible because I had a friend over. Oh. And so my friend and I are chilling, and then this mouse, he doesn't scurry along the wall and then turn the corner like they're supposed to, right? This mouse walks out in front of us, coming from what I can only assume was a nap. Because this mouse... this mouse had the nerve to walk out and stretch. On the rug, getting a deep stretch too, really bouncing with it as he moved. You know, like when your puppy wake up, you know what I'm talking about? They put that other foot in the air, that, oh. They really getting that whole back leg going. And the worst part about this happening in this moment is that when you tell your friend that, wow, I've lived here 2 years and I've never had a mouse, this is the first mouse I've ever seen, you sound like a liar, right? Because if this is the first mouse you've ever seen in this apartment, why does he seem so comfortable around you? Why is he stretching the back leg like he pays bills once in a while? Why is he getting so easy going, letting that back pop like he pays rent every once in a while? And so I was like, you know, clearly I gotta take care of it. So I call the landlord, who calls the exterminator. And one of the frustrating things, I'm actually glad it went down this way, because usually when you call an exterminator, that's when the pests in your home want to act right. As soon as you call the exterminator, that's when they're like, oh, you got company. I wouldn't dream. Oh, so landlord calls an exterminator. Exterminator comes the next day, right? I open the door for the exterminator. He takes about two steps in, and that's when the mouse that I saw yesterday runs past his foot, scurries along the wall, and then just turns the corner, right? But then my exterminator goes, ooh! And for the rest of the time he is in my home, he refuses to put his full foot on the floor. So he's just consistently walking around like, so how many you been seeing? Because you know they say, oof, oof. He was poking his head indoors where he would go in the room and stuff. And he was like, you know they say that if you see one, if you see one, there's three of them. I'm like, they is you. We can't both be scared, dog. Like, devastating, you know what I mean? Cause I'm not immune, you know. I've done the same thing. You know, sometimes, you know, someone tell me they have a pest or something, but we, you know, we gotta be more understanding. It's like nobody wants this in their home. But I had a friend one time back once again while I was living in Chicago, and he told me while we were out having lunch that he was having a bed bug problem. And when he said it, I was like, ooh. So how many you been seeing? And he was like, don't do that. You're not itching. I'm like, we don't know. No, it's important to humble yourself. Understand that you could be in any situation. You know, you really could. I don't care who you are in here. I don't care where you live, where you come from. Every single person, every one of you listening to me right now, all of us are two flies in the home away from seeming nasty. That's all it takes. One fly can happen to anybody, all right? One fly means you just opened a window. Two flies... What do they see? What do they smell? What they, I mean, two flies means one fly went and got another fly. I was like, do I have a place for us? I was reading this story. You know how during Halloween, there's always this weird thing where they're like, don't just let anybody give your kid candy. There's people out here putting razor blades in apples, right? There's people out here putting drugs in the candy. Just really watch your child's candy, right? And you know how for the entirety of Halloween in America, that's been like a myth? Like that's just not a thing that's happening, you know? Plus, if somebody give you an apple at Halloween, I'm never gonna find out a razor blade is in it. This apple is going straight back to them through their window. If they get cut in the process, that's on them, you know? And as far as, you know, drugs in the candy. I mean, I don't know. Come on now. Even if that was happening, a child on drugs like acid is just the way a kid acts anyway. That's... Yeah, I mean, little cousins I've had that walked up and told me a story that I've only heard again from a college friend who was deeply on acid. Like, that's... Adults on acid and children just operate at the same frequency. You know what I mean? Telling you stories about animals that don't exist and stuff. It's like, all right. Extra hyper. Yep. You know, check. You know, most people who babysit, like a 5 or 6 year old, are dealing with the same sort of struggles as a drug crisis center. You know, you just over here running around. I can't find you half the time. You have a little bit of sugar. You can't stop shaking. You won't go to sleep. If anything, drugs might slow a child down. But I bring it up because in New Zealand, there were about 60 pieces of candy that were donated to this food bank. So it did go out via the food bank, and the pieces of candy were meth, right? And they were just like meth, and they were like pure meth. Like it was like the methy Jolly Ranchers meth. Like I can't express enough how much this was just meth, right? And they said that, you know, they've been doing everything they can to recover all the pieces. They put out a warning and everything. And the company, they've contacted the company that it was wrapped in as a hard candy of and stuff. But most of the people that tried this meth hard candy spit it out immediately because they were like, it's just nasty. It's just real bitter. It doesn't have the oomph to it, right? Like, if anything, it's too pure. There's not enough sugar in the... Which is for the best. That's good, because apparently this little hard candy of meth had 300 doses of meth in it, which is terrifying, right? I'm glad that it was very nasty. People spit it out immediately and stuff. And what's crazy is that, okay, this is a part of the story that I wasn't fully sure if I was reading it right when I read it, but basically some people who had some sort of like adverse effects, like feeling a little nauseous or a little like jittery, because it's meth candy, so they were feeling a little jittery after they had a taste, even though they spit it out, 300 doses and a little hard candy, right? But they called the food bank and told them, like, hey, some of that candy making me feel weird, right? So then some of the staff at the food bank also tried the candy. Which feels like a weird way to test for drugs. You know what I mean? Feels like, I don't know. These hard candies might be, they might be like condensed mushrooms. It's like, well, only one way to find out. And then the staff also spit out the candy immediately because it just, you know, I can't imagine meth is delicious. And they said that they exhibited some, you know, some adverse effects, feeling a little, you know, little stomach ache, little jittery, little disoriented and stuff. And so they're trying to get to the bottom of it. But I don't know. It low-key feels like the candy company was just kind of trying it out. You know what I mean? Like, just to be like, we got to do something, all right? We're falling behind Starburst. We're falling behind Nerds. We can't keep up. We got to mix it up a little bit. Whether I'm like reading reviews of things or just like falling down different rabbit holes online, it is apparent that we have a deep problem, everybody, with like oversharing online. I know so much about people that I'll never meet. That feels crazy. You know what I mean? And it's to our detriment, you know? Like, that's us. Like, we're gonna have to explain to our grandkids what Twitter was. When we're like grandparents, we're gonna have to sit our kids down and be like, yeah, you know, when I was coming up, there were people who would just tell everybody what they thought without anyone asking. And ruin their own life. You know what I mean? They would just wake up and be like, I don't need a job today. And then they would just admit things that they could have kept in their head. You know? Because you just, you watch a lot of it happen, especially like when somebody, because it could happen to anybody. When anybody's like just going through the internet backlash of a day, maybe you said something, maybe you did something, maybe you were caught on camera somewhere or something like that. And then even when a person tries to defend themselves, it's too far gone. And then even if you do a good job of defending yourself, and even if the thing isn't what people thought it was, that never rises to the level of the initial thing, right? And so, you know, it just feels like a lot of unforced errors in life when people do this stuff. And they're still doing it. Sometimes I still see people post a thing and I'm like, you could have told no one. That's wild. Why would you do? Everyone's mad now. No, I just wish we could bring back diaries. Remember diaries? Remember journals? Remember when you were like a kid and you would just write in that? And it would be your deepest, darkest, most personal secrets. All of your like internal thoughts, your whole internal monologue would be put on paper somewhere. And then you put under the bed. And it was a violation. It was the deepest violation if your parents read your diary or read your journal or something like that. Because those ideas, those thoughts were truly private. Like you had to work them out of yourself and you had to put them somewhere. But they were for safekeeping for just you, right? And so they'd be under the bed, wherever, and then finally, years later, years after you write that stuff, right? You're maybe about to go to college, or you're just moving out the house or something. You flipping the mattress for the first time in 4 years. And you see, no, my journal. Oh my gosh. And then you look through some of the pages, you read a little bit of it, and you go, oof. Who is this? Oh, no. Oh, I'm glad that's nowhere else. Because now I can burn it. And no one will ever know. I remember I found one of my journals from when I was a kid, and I was like, oof. This is pretty horny and racist. Man, I don't know what I was on. This is wild. I gotta throw this through the shredder now. No. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough because I'm trying to just navigate things. Like I do my best to be a good person. I'm sure everybody is to a certain degree, you know, even if it doesn't feel like it, you know. But like, I don't know, man. I'm like liberal, but my friends are like liberal. Like I'm liberal as in like we believe all the same stuff. Like if you go down the list, I'm like, yeah, that. Yeah, me too. I do as well, right? So we believe the same stuff, but when they say it, they just, you know, they say it all slow and touching their chest and stuff. It's like, do you know what I'm talking about? It's like, you'll be like, no, I believe that a woman should have autonomy over her body, right? And then they'll be like, I believe. That a woman? Should have autonomy over her own body. I'm like, yeah, you said it slower. Like, I, you know, I don't know. Yeah, sometimes I don't know what some of that is. Sometimes I don't know if that's just like them trying to impress somebody. Because the person I'm talking about is a dude. Like, I'm like, there's no way you feel it this hard, bro. Like, that's suspicious as hell. It really is. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's weird when something is like, and don't take what I'm about to say the wrong way. Just listen, hear me out. It's wild when something that you want to fight for and help someone fight for, right? But it's not your direct, like in the moment, your direct body or problem, and you're madder than them. That's suspicious. Do you know what I mean? It's like when you meet a white person, they're like, you know what really gets me? Segregation. Based off of how you said that, there's no way that's true. There's no way. I don't believe you for a second, right? Because I get into weird arguments with my like liberal friends. Because we literally believe the same things, but then they take it a step further than feels logical to me, right? But we would still like vote the same way and do the same. We would still be at the same rally. But they just stomping harder, like that's gonna do something. I'm like. Like I had an argument with one of my friends where, you know, he was talking. I don't like when sometimes academics will pull a thing that works in theory and it works in like academia, but it doesn't work in practical life. Right. So I was having this argument with my friend where, you know, he was basically saying that black people can't be racist because racism is prejudice plus power. Right. And I was like, that's. Don't do that. Because a part of me gets what he was trying to say. A part of him was saying, like, look, anybody can be prejudiced, and prejudice is hate and stuff like that, but black people systematically have not had the power to exert their hate over other people, right? And so until then, you know, black people can't be racist, right? And I was like, but you... Part of what you're saying is true, but when you say it out of your mouth, you make the whole thing sound wrong. You know? And so now I'm arguing with my friend, and it's even weirder because he's white. He's white, and he's a man. He's a man from the abortion example. Like, that's just, this is the same person. And he's a white dude that gets real mad about abortion and thinks that I can't be right. So then I get in an argument with my friend. We're at a Denny's, by the way. I get in an argument with my friend that black people, we can be racist. Don't. Now I'm yelling in a Denny's at my white friend about how racist I am. But the point I was trying to make was like, look, I see what you're saying. And historically, I get that if you're making this example for like a different time, right? But when you say power, do you mean power of the individual or power of the group, right? Because individually, there are very powerful black people that could exert their power over other people, right? But if you're talking about power of the group, then yeah, maybe we'll never get there. I'm just saying, like, power of the group, I don't see an all-black Senate happening anytime soon. You know? But still, I was like, you realize we both acknowledge that, like, prejudice is bad and hate is bad. And so that is the thing that people mean when they say racism. You're getting into this, like, weird argument around the word that's distracting from the thing that actually bothers people. Does that make sense? What I'm saying? So then I'm now having to give examples of me being racist to prove my point. We're still in the Denny's. They won't bring the check because I think they're worried about me, right? So then they won't. because I'm being too loud. I'm being too loud. And so then I'm like, no, I can be and have been racist. And I have to take account of when it happens. I take accountability for like both my thoughts and my actions, what I say to people, because we're all people. We're all trying to find a base level of like understanding and kindness towards each other. So then I have to take accountability for when I do make someone feel bad, right? And whether that thing is whatever, justified in the moment because of how they were reacting to me or completely unjustified based off a preconceived notion. I have to take stock of this. I have to take responsibility for myself. It doesn't matter that there are other disenfranchised people out there. I can't scapegoat them to act however I want to act, right? So then I was giving an example of me being racist. Okay. I'm not saying this is right. It's just how I am. And I'm trying to change. Remember that. But I look at my white friend. Okay. I feel when I see my white friends struggle in the sun, I don't really care. Like, that is racist though, because it's an entire group where I'm like, I then do better. Like, it's like, that's not right. That's not right. You know what I mean? But I look at white people struggling in the sun the way I imagine, not calling anybody out, but it's the way I imagine they look at black people when we like can't get along, right? It's like, it's not really my problem, is it? Do better, I guess. You know? No, it's tough, because it's like, I don't know, I'm liberal, but I'm not like liberal. Like, still working some stuff out, you know? When I can.